Benvenuti tifosi napoletani to another edition of Far From Vesuvius. I'm Rafa Rispo, and I'm here to present this episode of the podcast where we analyze the draw against Leicester City 2-2 on Thursday in the Europa League, and to present frenemies. This week's frenemy is Udinese fan Sonia Missio, probably the only Udinese fan I know that speaks English. Actually, definitely the only Udinese fan I know that speaks English. But yeah, just wanted to come in and say hi before we got the show rolling. We are actually going to be doing regular podcasts, and I believe pretty soon we're going to start them on Thursdays. But it's going to be with Marco Cubani D'Onofrio as the host of the podcast. So it's a little bit of announcement there. So basically what's going to happen is we're going to have Marco as the host of the show, and he will have as co-hosts a mixture of any one of us, myself, Henry, Ken, or Kirsten, with him. Today, Marco and Henry both sent me in solo audio pieces on their assessment of the Napoli draw against Leicester City. So that I decided to piece together along with frenemies today. So I hope you really enjoy that. But moving forward, like I said, at some point soon, we're going to have Marco as host of the show with a panel and possibly some guests. So look for that. And I'll stick with concentrating on Raff and Raff and frenemies. And Ken's going to do his Twitch thing. And Kirsten's going to do a lot of cool things promoting her book, and we still have Maradona to finish. So guys, please hang in there. There is stuff coming down on the pipeline. I know we're blasting you with content lately, but we're going to have more cool stuff too. So hang in, hang tight for that. I really hope you enjoy this episode with Marco, with the doctor, and with Sonia, our frenemy this week. Enjoy the show. Forza Napoli sempre. Insigne. Toquecito en corto con Fabián Ruiz. La picaron Fabián, Osimhen. ¡Osimhen! ¡Golazo! ¡Gol! ¡Di Napoli al 69! ¡Tiki-taka, tiki-taka! ¡Víctor Osimhen! 2-1! Sacó largo el arquero. Ola se la dejó de taquito para el más. La recupera Leicester City. No puede ganar el balón el Napoli. Ahora sí lo consigue. Atención. Pestaña. El que sube por este lado es Di Lorenzo. Giovanni que se frena. Tocó para Fabián Ruiz. Pelota por el lado derecho. Politano con el balón. Politano la levantó flotadita para Osimhen. ¡Golazo!
Hello and welcome to the Far From Vesuvius podcast. I am your host, Marco Cubani D'Onofrio. Post-game show, Europa League. We're talking Napoli, Leicester City. Napoli comes back from being down 2-0 to draw 2-2. We'll take it. We'll take the point away in England. But definitely some concerns and some patterns forming here as a follow-up to that Napoli, to that Juventus game. And we'll talk about that. But we'll also talk about what this means going forward for this club. So thank you for joining me at Far From Vesuvius. This is how you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Cubani _ is how you can get a hold of me. And feel free to tweet me at any time, because we love to be interacting with you guys as much as possible. Make sure you're following the network and stay tuned to everything that we're doing, because we've got a ton of good stuff going on. But let's get to this game and let's talk about what actually happened here and what transpired. Because it seemed like a pretty dominant performance from Napoli. Much like that game against Juventus, Napoli found themselves down a goal despite dominating play for large chunks of it. And I mean, in this game, Napoli weren't necessarily dominated pre-Leicester opening the scoring, so that's a little bit different. But following the opening goal, Napoli was all over Leicester City. They were unfortunate to a certain degree not to score a goal, but a lot of that also came down to Napoli just not being clinical enough, right? Like, Napoli had their opportunities. Osimhen couldn't hit the back of a barn with some of those shots. He looked absolutely terrible. Zielinski wasn't great either. I mean, he could have done a lot better as well. And give credit where credit is due, because Schmeichel absolutely played phenomenal in between the sticks tonight. However, it was a different story in the second half. Napoli go down 2-0. A little bit fortunate not to be down 3-0 with the offside goal being ruled off. It was a tight call, but it was indeed offside. So Napoli go down 2-0. And they find themselves 2-0 down with, 21 minutes to play in the game? 22 minutes to play in the game? And not many people are giving this side a chance, but Napoli refused to, I guess, die, right? And again, we've seen this become a pattern with them, which is nice, but concerning as well, and we'll talk about that. But, you know, they go down 2-0, and we see a beautiful goal from Victor Osimhen, and you're thinking to yourself, where was that, man? You've had easier chances tonight, and he puts a ball over Schmeichel. It was just a gorgeous goal to get Napoli back into the game, 2-1. And then, 10 minutes later, if that, he finds the equalizer off a header, just a beautiful header, top corner. He draws the game level for Napoli 2-2, and that's how this one finishes. Leicester actually go down to 10 men at one point very late in the game, but Napoli don't have enough time really to take advantage. And again, it ends 2-2. But let's talk about what actually happened on the pitch, because like I mentioned, Napoli dominated in terms of play, in terms of chances, in terms of possession. Leicester City were much more clinical. And again, when you're down, you're probably going to have more possession. So that does make sense. The question is, why does Napoli find themselves down, you know, for the second week in a row early on? And not the second week, sorry, the second game in a row. And I know it's a different competition, but nonetheless, it's a concerning stat, because if you're not starting on time, you're always going to be behind. And that's not somewhere you want to be playing from. And yes, Napoli have been able to come back. They were able to beat Juventus, which was amazing. You know, we all love that Koulibaly late winner. And today it was beautiful to see Osimhen score a late doppietta. But at the same time, you shouldn't have to rely on late goals to get a result. And that is a little bit concerning in itself. But overall, we have to be happy that this is a team that refuses to give up, right? This is a team with some mental strength and some mental fortitude that I'm not sure we saw over the last few years, right? Ever, maybe, to be honest with you. Spalletti's, I know it's early, but Spalletti's instituted some, you know, some swagger to the side, which is nice to see. And again, we'll see what this means in the long run and whether they can keep this up. But a 2-2 result is not a bad way to start the Europa League. Now, coming into this show, I had a narrative that I wanted to tell. And what's beautiful about the beautiful game is that sometimes it throws you for a twist. And sometimes you think it's going one way and it spins you completely sideways. Right? Napoli's down 2-0. And I had what I wanted to say in this podcast. And then, of course, Victor Osimhen scores 2 goals. And what I mean by that is that I came into this podcast and I thought when I saw the starting lineup that I was a little disappointed not to see Petagna start. And the reason I say that is because what we learned more than ever during the Euro Cup with Mancini's side was that squad really was united, right? We saw a team that played and died together. We saw how much they loved being around each other, how much they liked each other, the presence of on and off the pitch. And Mancini did a good job to make everybody feel involved. And I think that had to be the concern with Petagna with keeping him. I think it was important that we did keep him because we do not have anybody else with his characteristics, especially when Osimhen's off to, you know, the Africa Cup of Nations or if he's hurt or anything like that. So we need a guy like Petagna on this squad. We need to get him involved, especially after he came through in the clutch like he did already this season, right? You want to build momentum on that. And I thought this was an opportunity to really get him minutes. And so, yes, Osimhen proved me wrong. and I can see Spalletti, why he wanted to do this, his point, maybe his vision. Maybe he wanted to get Osman rolling because he hasn't been yet. Maybe he wanted to get this guy building some confidence going into the game against Udinese on Monday. So maybe that's why. But for me, I thought it would have made more sense to kind of start Petagna, put some pressure on Osman a little bit and you know, make him feel like, you know, nothing's guaranteed necessarily. And I'm not saying that it isn't, because it should be for him, or for the most part, if he's able to deliver. But, you know, to feel that pressure a little bit as a kid. Plus, this kid was on international break in Africa last week. He's played and he will be playing a whole lot of minutes coming up this season, touch wood. So it makes sense to give Petagna the opportunity when he can, especially with Mertens still out. Because when Mertens comes back, Lord knows that Petagna is going to have even less time on the pitch. I will say, I found it interesting Spalletti found a way to have both Petagna and Osimhen on the pitch today. So maybe that's something we see going forward. I just think that it's important that we have Petagna become part of this squad and feel important. Because I do think he plays a role. And I do think he can become an important part of this team. Like we saw, I mean, he rescued 3 points for this side. So I think it's important, like I said, that he does get involved. I thought it was good that Manolas got some rest today. You know, Rami got the start, and I think that was good. I think that was important. I think we need to see some rotation, and maybe I would have liked to see a little bit more. I did like to see Lozano play. Zielinski, I think he's got to get going again, and I know he's coming off of his injury, so I think it's nice that we're starting to see him get some minutes as well. But overall, again, I think this was a decent performance in the end. I do worry about Napoli's inability to put chances away, because Napoli could have had a lot more realistically tonight. And they'll take 2 goals. I mean, 2 goals away in European competition, in England, in a tough situation against a good side, is impressive, and we will take it and we will move on with it. And I think early in the group, that's fine. Again, I would like to see more rotation, especially with next week. You've got a midweek Serie A game on Thursday. You're playing Udine on Monday. I think you can make some changes. And Spalletti, I think, still trying to figure out his squad and still trying to get these guys playing early in the season, because there's another international break coming up. So I am aware of all that, and I do see why that all makes sense. And going forward, it'll be interesting to see how he manages the squad, right? Especially when it comes to Europa League competition. With Maurizio Sarri, Napoli clearly punted on European competition for the most part, especially in that last season in what people are calling the Scudetto Pact. And God knows how frustrating it is to even think about that season and what could have been and what should have been, especially after that Juventus game. But we don't talk about that, and we digress. Because in 2021, Napoli has won all 3 of their Serie A matches to start the season, and they've beaten Juventus on top of that. So I do think that Serie A should be a priority. I think getting back into the Champions League is a must this season. I don't think they can afford not to. So I think that's where the priority's got to lie. But yes, I do think the Europa League is a legitimate competition this team can win. And I do think when fully healthy, this squad has enough players to make that happen, right? This is a deep squad. Yeah, we've seen some injuries early on, but let's not forget Mertens hasn't played yet, right? He's still out. Lobotka right now is still out, and he looked very good early on under Spalletti. He looked like a completely different player. So hopefully we see him back on the pitch sooner than later. Diego Demi, same thing. He's still out. So Napoli really is hurting in the midfield. And when Napoli is healthy and fully stocked, this team is dangerous. I mean, look up top, right? You've got Politano and Lozano able to, you know, switch at any point, and both those players could be starting on 99% of Serie A teams right now, right? Or 95%. 99. I'm going to stick with that 99. 99% for sure. And then you go across the board, and even guys who are sticking around this season, like Unas, who we usually would send out on loan or would try to sell, he's looked great so far. And even tonight, coming in late, he brought some creativity. He did the same thing against Juventus at the San Paolo. So this is a player that's really leaving his mark. And this was a guy we weren't even thinking about when you're talking about guys like Mertens already, guys like Insigne already, Osimhen, Petagna, Lozano, Politano, Napoli's Zielinski. Like, Napoli's stacked up top. So they've got options. And when you're healthy, you can afford to play in multiple competitions. I mean, the Coppa Italia kicks off in, what, January? And I don't take that seriously, because I do think it's a nice competition for Napoli to win. But it's really not that many games. It's not that much of a commitment. You got the round of 16, the quarterfinals, the two semifinals, if you get there, and then the final, which is later on in the season anyways. So it'll be interesting to see again how Spalletti manages the squad. But so far, when you look at what he's done in both Serie A and in Europe, how are you not impressed with this guy? He's got this team playing some fantastic football. They're entertaining. They're a joy to watch. They're resilient. They're fun. You know, like, what's not to like? And you know, as frustrating as today was, especially, you know, going into the halftime break, after the break when Leicester scores and it's offside, and you're like, okay, Napoli has an opportunity here. They're going to take advantage of that. And then Leicester scores another, and you're like, this game's done. And they say, no, it's not. And Osimhen scores a beautiful goal. And then Osimhen scores another beautiful goal. Right? Like, it's fun to see this team play. So we'll see what happens going forward. It's a good start. I think Napoli fans need to breathe a little bit, take it in, soak it in, try to enjoy it. It's good times right now. That could be very different tomorrow. But let's not worry about tomorrow. Let's talk about today. Let's talk about this team right now. And let's look about where they are domestically and where they are in Europe. And yes, it's very, very early. But it's a good spot to be with a brand new coach. So, I have been your host, Marco Cubani D'Onofrio. That's it. You know, I'm not going to take up too much time. I don't want to waste too much time. I think it's important to hear feedback, though. So I would like to hear all the listeners. If you have the opportunity, get at us at Far From Vesuvius, at Cubani _. Let us know what you're thinking. Make sure you're interacting with the network, because we got some great stuff going on. We got the Raff and Raff Rant. We've got the podcast series. We've got the website content. We've got so much stuff going on that we got Twitch with Ken. I mean, like, just make sure you're sticking to the network and make sure you're doing all that good stuff. Thank you very much for tuning in. And Forza Napoli Sempre. Scriva sempre, stai contenta. Io non penso che a te sola. No pensiero, ma consola. Tu pensa solamente. Ciao ragazzi. Here we are. I think, as Rafa would say, the doctor is in the house. I'm not a medical doctor, just in case anyone's worrying. I got a PhD about Shakespeare, so please don't get in touch if you have a medical emergency. I'm actually here to talk about football. So, I'm recording this the morning after the Leicester game. Just had my espresso. What an uplifting night that was, right? I mean, this is a Napoli that has mentality, that can handle pressure, that can come back from adversity, not throw our toys out of the pram. That was a big thing for me, is that we didn't, you know, in the past, and we've seen it so many times, things don't go our way, we start to get grumpy with the ref, we start to just try things without thinking. Weirdly, I think we actually got more intelligent as a team the longer the game progressed. And actually, the more things went against us, the more intelligent we got, which is actually quite rare. Huge props to Spalletti for this. And, you know, as lots of people have pointed out, this isn't the first time this season that's happened. Can we keep this going for the rest of the season? Can this be a mentally strong Napoli? I really hope so. Don't you reckon? I mean, how many years have we been banging our heads against the wall? Even when Sarri was playing that fantastic football, there was always that feeling that if things went against us, it would all go to shit.
basically. Okay, so what am I going to do today is I'm going to just have a quick look, a bit sort of in-depth look at our midfield. I was last on here talking about the Spalletti system and how it needs a De Rossi, and how I was a bit worried. Since then, we've signed Franck Anguissa, who is clearly a wonderful player. And, you know, Lobotka has arrived and has done a fantastic job in the regista role. And we lost him to injury, which is a real shame. Who'd have thought we'd be saying that losing Lobotka would be a real shame? And our young North Macedonian diamond, Elmas, has had a go as well. So how's that all gone? I'm going to start by talking about Fabien, who is our enigmatic mago. And I said before that this is a big season for him. I said last season it was a big season for him. But this season is absolutely, can he step up? Can he take a leadership role? Can he maybe get some numbers that can help fill that Hamsik hole that we've had alongside Zelinski, who did that last season. He stepped up, didn't he, to really start doing well. So it's been really interesting with Fabien, because he didn't start the season very well, I didn't think, against Venezia. I thought same old, same old. Drifting in, what's he doing in the team? What's his role? You know, decent pass success rate, 89% against Venezia. But he only made one chance for the team, only one key pass. He was dispossessed once. I mean, it was sort of one of those slightly average performances. Tough, though, because we went down to 10 men. Then against Genoa, he scores that wonderful goal, which is great. And we need to see a little bit more of that. I think he needs to score a few more goals this season. Now, again, his pass rate is successful, but he makes 43 passes in the opposition half, which is a big step up from the Venezia game where he only made 27. So there's a bit more purpose to what he's doing. He makes two key passes. And I think Fotmob said he was the man of the match. I don't think he was the man of the match, but I thought it was really promising. And then against Juve, the midfield were absolutely wonderful. It dominated the match. He completed the most passes in the match. He had the most tackles in the match. He made four key passes. He won his tackle, interception, five recoveries. It was an all-action midfield role. No dribbles, which is quite interesting. And I think that some of the problems that Fabien has is when he gets the ball from that deep position and tries to take the whole world on, and sometimes it doesn't go wrong, he loses the ball. Interestingly, Juve is the first game he played with Franck Anguissa. And how well did they play together? Wonderfully eccentric midfielders that are quite hard to define, playing together in a double pivot with a Luciano Spalletti on the sidelines. Just absolutely adore that. It seems very Napoli to have that kind of individual flair, that idiosyncratic style on the pitch. You know, in some ways it's a bit terrifying, but I love it. I mean, it makes us completely unique. And then last night against Leicester, I thought he had a decent game. It was a pazzo game, wasn't it? It was end-to-end, there was mistakes everywhere. But I thought, as the game progressed, we'd start to dominate the midfield. And actually, for the majority of the match, we did dominate that midfield. 86% pass success, 34 in the opposition half, three chances created. So it's interesting, the first game in Venezia, only one chance created. Second game, two. Against Juve, four, and then against Leicester, three. That's the kind of responsibility we want him to have on the pitch. I think this is a really promising start to the season for Fabien. I think there's some consistency here. I think he's getting better. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he's really doing his best alongside his new Cameroonian midfield partner. Now, Anguissa himself against Juve was the most accurate passer on the pitch, 96%. 46 passes in the opposition half. One of the best debuts for us that I can remember. I'm very excited about him. And he kept this going against Leicester. It's a bit more of a crazy match. So 85% pass success rate. He created a chance. Tried a couple of dribbles. He won two tackles. You know, we've got Fabian and Anguissa are all action. And, you know, Anguissa's not just a defensive midfielder. You know, there's been some great stuff on here. The dude from Fulham that Rafa was talking to really explained that really well. Now, Spalletti, I think, works best under a 4-2-3-1. We've had to play 4-3-3 a few times. I don't think it's worked brilliantly well. We kind of played it yesterday against Leicester, although I think we were shifting between the two formations. And what's interesting is when we've tried to play three in midfield and we've tried to put Elmas in that situation, Elmas, I just don't think he's a central midfielder. When he came on yesterday, he was playing more as an attacking midfielder out wide, or drifting out wide, and I think it suits him much better. And, you know, Elmas against Genoa only had 33 touches, really struggled to impose himself on the game. Against Juve, he's hooked at half-time, only 27 touches. So I know he's only 21, everyone. You know, that's unbelievably 21. But I just don't think his natural position is in the middle of the park. So when we get Lobotka back, when we get Demir back, we've got Fabian and Anguissa. That's four fantastic players competing for that double pivot, and I think we really slot Elmas into that trident. And how good is that looking? Oh my mamma mia! Like the substitutions that Spalletti has done in every single game have changed the match, and he's been absolutely brilliant on that. And again, it was a real weak point for Gattuso. So I think, but the fact he can bring on Unas, he can bring on Politano, how good has Politano been this season? And again, he really changed the match. I know Osimhen will get the headlines, and rightly so, magnificent display of a classic number nine. Probably he's not quite up there with Haaland yet, but he's definitely the second best young nine in the world at the moment. How great that we got him on our team, that's fantastic. But I think Politano really changed the game. So the fact that Spalletti has made these great substitutions speaks volumes to him and his tactical acumen, but it also speaks volumes to our squad. Wasn't all positive, though. We should have won this game. And the reason we didn't win the game was, in my opinion, the classic area, our weakness at fullback. The first goal was one of the least intelligent examples of football I think I've ever seen. Why on earth was Malqui so far up the pitch? Koulibaly, sort of the slightly aimless long ball towards him, and there's no one covering. So there's this huge hole on our right side. Leicester's fastest and most direct players on the left. Why either Anguissa or Fabien or anyone couldn't have covered that hole, or Lozano as well, of Malqui? And Malqui spent a lot of the first half playing this really advanced role, which I understand. If that's going to happen, you need to cover. And then the goal itself, Di Lorenzo could do better. He's got a bit of a weakness on crosses. I mean, I love Di Lorenzo. I think he's a fantastic player, one of the best fullbacks in the league. But that weakness really speaks volumes. It merely means that we're, you know, it was a very, very, very positive evening. But if we're being really fussy, that's the thing. And we're getting excited, and rightly so. We got a much better mentality. But any conversations we're going to have about a Scudetto, and it's very early, I'm not joining those conversations. I think we don't have good enough fullbacks. And some people think, well, you know, is it the most important area of the pitch? We saw yesterday that when you get those things wrong, it can really, really harm you. And finally, you know, just to very briefly celebrate Victor Osimhen. Fantastic that within the squad, there seems to have been some great work on putting an arm around his shoulder after the red card, getting his focus back. I thought it was really interesting to see Koulibaly after the final whistle with Osimhen, and they were kind of talking to each other. It just seemed like a really, just, I don't know what the word is, mature conversation, just like two senior players talking about the game. And I don't know if that's a deliberate thing, but it seems that the senior players are really making Osimhen feel like he's part of the club in that sense, stepping up, getting some more responsibility. And that is absolutely fantastic to see. And, you know, Koulibaly has had a fantastic season so far. Isn't it great to kind of see him back? He's been fantastic the past couple of seasons for 70% of the season, and he's had a few dips and injuries and things, but he seems so motivated. And obviously that wonderful goal against Juve, which we've all talked about. Marco has said on Twitter loads that he's, you know, our second best player in the history of the club. We're not quite that. The most influential player we've had since Maradona. I'll go further and say he's the second best player in the history of Napoli. You know, absolutely unbelievable talent. There'll be Cavani fans here shouting things at me. But if you think about the, you know, it's a different position and what he brings to that position. We are so lucky to be living in the Koulibaly era and to have so many seasons of seeing him play for the club in the way that we didn't with Cavani. He only gave us 3 years of his time. Wonderful years that they were. Anyway, that's just my thought. That's the doctor in the house. We got Udinese coming up. It's going to be really tough. They've had a fantastic start to the season. Great defence. They've only dropped 2 points so far. And it's on a Monday. Oh, well, I hate Monday night football. I'm not American, so I'm not really used to it. But that's going to be a really big test, see if we can get that consistency going. I think it's going to be a big game for our forward line. Can we break that down? Hopefully Osimhen can bag some more. That pace and presence and intelligence that he has with those fantastic moves that he makes to bring other players into the game. All right then, take care everyone. In the meantime, Forza Napoli sempre.
Is Verde, can he finish? Off the line by Natink, incredible defending by the Dutch defender. Artiest, surely in an offside position there, we play on. Another clearance by Natink. Udinese might get a chance here. They're through and they've broken the deadlock late on. Heartbreak for Spezia. Samardzic with the goal. Recently introduced as a substitute, and the German Udinese are up to third in Serie A with that win at the Stadio Alberto Pico. It's finished Spezia 0, Udinese 1.
Della nostra sinistra, ancora un errore di Manolas che si fa prendere la pallone da Morata. Morata, gol! Va in vantaggio la Juventus su un errore clamoroso da parte di Manolas, che non si accorge di Morata che gli prende il pallone al decimo minuto esatto. Napoli 0, Juventus 1, ma i 37.000 della Maradona credono ancora e vogliono.
Gradi si è alzato, una piacevolissima brezza. Insigne prova il tiro a giro, erroraccio di Szczęsny, gol di Politano per il Napoli. E ancora una volta Szczęsny la fa grossa, perché sul tiro di Insigne c'era sulla traiettoria, non sembrava neanche irresistibile il tiro di Insigne. Il portiere polacco nel ricadere ha perso il pallone, si è fiondato Politano, che è andato a segnare il gol del pareggio della Napoli. E l'angolo con una ribattuta da fuori ha mandato il pallone di pochissimo alto sulla porta difesa dal connazionale Szczęsny. Gol del Napoli, gol del Napoli in mischia, è andato a segnare per il Napoli ancora una volta sull'errore della Juventus. Il Napoli che si è portato in avvantaggio quasi autogol, e non sappiamo se Szczęsny abbia ricacciato il pallone indietro prima o dopo il tocco sul secondo colpo di testa sul secondo palo per il Napoli. È andato a segno il Napoli con il gol di Koulibaly, che mette il pallone a segno, e quindi è lui che tocca per ultimo il pallone. Koulibaly, però bisogna vedere se Szczęsny abbia ricacciato il pallone fuori prima o dopo, lo può sapere l'arbitro per sapere se è scattata la goal line technology. Sta di fatto che il Napoli ha ribaltato la situazione. Napoli 2, Juventus 1, gol che finora viene attribuito a Koulibaly.
Okay, Tifosi, we are back with another edition of Frenemies, and I had no other person in mind for our Udinese frenemy. She is calcio writer, podcaster, and Udinese sufferer. If you go to her Twitter account, you'll see that she's also the future FIFA president. But one I day. Feel that most importantly, though, co-founder of the Unusual Efforts podcast with our very own Kirsten Schluitz, who wanted to be here with us, but it's just too early in the morning. Sonia Missio, thank you so much for being our frenemy this week as we take on Udinese.
No worries. Though I did not know that this was too early for Kirsten, so she's about to get a bombardment of angry text messages from me saying I'm not worth it.
No, I tried to get her with us and it just didn't happen. But I told her that, you know, the next go around, maybe we'll have you back in and have her on with us too.
Sounds good.
Yes. But how have you been first? Let's talk about you. What's going on with you and the podcast? How's the podcast going? Have you guys done anything lately? Have you taken a break? What's going on with Unusual Efforts?
A little bit of a break on the podcast front. There's still articles and whatnot going out. I think much like, you know, everybody across the world, 2021 has not been much easier than 2020. So taking a little bit of a, I guess, podcasting break a bit just to kind of get everything in a row. But the website is still going, unusualefforts.com. Amazing articles up there. Honestly, like, I can't take any credit for this because I haven't written for it, but it's like some of the best, most thoughtful, provocative, just incredible insight that quite frankly, you won't find anywhere else, because a lot of, you know, sports outlets don't like talking about subjects that sometimes are a little bit touchy or uncomfortable or, you know, don't always reflect well on teams. So yeah, it's to do a little bit of self-promotion, I would suggest you turn off this podcast right now and immediately go to Unusual Efforts and then turn this podcast back on.
Yeah, and then come back for the Udinese stuff. Yeah,
yeah, right, exactly.
Well, I mean, just going through the Twitter account, I know you know, someone in here is a big Ted Lasso fan, and I've just really started watching the show. It's amazing. You see a tweet on Ted Lasso here. So, yeah, I the only person I could think of was you, because where else can you find an English-speaking Udinese fan? Tell us about that. What's the story behind that? I mean, I'm going to assume it's an Antonio Di Natale thing. But you go ahead and give us your story. How in God's earth are you an Udinese fan?
It's a very boring story. I'm sorry. It's very typical. My dad was born in San Daniele da Friuli and so I was doomed from my birth. I'm 6 months child with our first kid right now, and
oh wow,
he is doomed from his birth.
We need more Udinese fans. That's awesome.
It's
congratulations.
Really, thank you. It's really just an abusive cycle of Friulanos putting on their children. It's funny. It's actually so I'm from Toronto. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a bit of Forlans in Toronto. So it's one of the not bigger places that people have immigrated to, but it's fairly big. And I don't know if you saw their third kit last year, but what they did is they had kind of like a call out and a shout out to sort of all of their fans abroad. And they put the different cities of wherever they had a cultural center. So Toronto was actually on their jersey. And I mean, I should have worn it for this.
That's okay. Was it the yellow kit?
It's like bluish.
Oh, the blue with the green stripe.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page now, actually.
It was last season.
Last season.
So not,
right.
Not their third kit this season, which looks like was designed by somebody from, like, I don't know. I can't even think of anyone right now, but
they wore that in the win over who'd they play last week? Spezia, right? The
potentially.
Spezia? Yeah.
Potentially. Yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about this season. Last season they had a blue kit, right? It was a blue kit. And it's listed here as their away kit, but yeah. Okay. I'll check that out because that's really cool. I love how clubs, because you see, I think you've seen that with Torino lately and Bologna and Genoa, who like really pay homage to like past players or what have you, and Udinese going with the fan bases around the world. That's really cool. How many other Udinese fans are from Toronto? Like, do you have a like contingency there? Do you get to get together with some people, even if it's like one or two?
So there's my dad and my brother and my Zia, who unfortunately passed away earlier this year. So we're dwindling in numbers. No, in all seriousness, there is a few. So like I think our most famous fan is Julian Fantino, who used to be the police chief here. He then became an MP. I'm actually about to reach out to try to see if we can kind of rebuild a Toronto fan base here. Mm-hmm. Just for a couple of reasons. One, it's just sort of nice to learn and talk to other fans. Second, too, because there's been some, what's the word? Well, I mean, I'll be kind of blunt. DAZN didn't renew their Serie A rights.
Right.
So
right.
Serie A
is... That's a whole mess in Canada. I realize that. Yeah.
So we do have another provider who does carry it. We have two providers that carry it. One is a cable, TLN, who is sort of like Tele Latino. It's Italian and Spanish language speaking, shows, movies, whatever, whatnot. So that's carrying it, but they don't carry all the games. So if you're an Udinese fan like me, unless they're playing Juventus, which already happened and we can discuss that,
We will discuss that.
Or it's a big game like today's afternoon game. You're not going to see kind of those little games. Like last week's game, as you were talking about, Spezia, that would never be on TV.
Right.
And then the other provider is a streaming place called Fubo, I think it is. And yes. it's just new. Like I haven't tried it out because basically we found out DAZN wasn't going to have Serie A like 3 days before kickoff. Or the start of the season, and so I just haven't tried it yet. So Serie A is kind of an endangered species in Toronto, so I just want to see if I can get together with other fans, and if you're in Toronto listening to this and you're an Udinese fan, please reach out. But yeah, it's the idea of, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm having a kid, so for it to know its cultural heritage. My Zia passed away, so kind of that loss of feeling of like that connection there.
Yeah.
And so it's all sort of just happening all at once that maybe, you know, finding other people from, you know, a little tiny northern spot in Italy would be kind of nice.
It would. Fubo is available here in the States as well. But here it's CBS Paramount that has the rights to Serie A. And when I found out that Fubo was carrying Serie A in Canada, I got really excited because I like Fubo as a product myself. The problem is there is that they're only showing 5 matches a week as well. So I don't know if it's the same as with TLN, but yeah, Fubo, I mean, they promised to try to carry more throughout the season, and hopefully next season they can renew and get the whole, you know, the whole league. Yeah. Because that is really what it's about. Awareness in, you know, the country, the region. Yeah. You need to be able to take your pick from all 20 teams in the league and, you know, watch a game and get inspired. Or like in your case, have the, you know, the cultural background and the, you know, you're from there, you know, your family is from Friuli, which I think is cool. It's not boring. It's cool. I love it. I love it because most people from like other regions of Italy will tend to gravitate to the bigger clubs. Like, you know, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of
Juventus fans we're talking about.
Exactly.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Juve fans. Yeah. Well, good luck with that. I mean, I'm such a fan of taking our children and the next generation into. I mean, I don't know if you've. I mean, you know, you just followed me on Twitter, but you'll see my Twitter account. My kids are all in on Napoli. It's amazing, and the Italian too. It's wonderful. Yeah. So I look forward to seeing your journey with your child too. I think it's awesome.
Let's get into... though, he will be half a United fan. I feel like that one's a losing battle, but...
That's all right. You know, what can you... Listen, United and Udinese, you know, they both start with U.
Why not?
There
you go.
Let's get into Udinese. A great start to the season, but I feel like the, you know, the crap storm is coming. You have Napoli, and then you have Roma. I believe after Roma, you have Sampdoria, which is, you know, they just won 3-0 today. You know, it doesn't get easier from here, but, you know, the opening match against Juventus, 2-2, the comeback, you had to have been ecstatic, as ecstatic as I was, because anytime Juventus slip up, it's great. And especially to see Ronaldo. Yeah, exactly. To see Ronaldo get that match winner in the last minute, with air quotes, and then take his shirt off and flex his abs and to get the yellow card for it, all for it to be taken away. And Udinese, tie with Juventus. Amazing, amazing. How did you feel?
It was, I mean, it couldn't happen to a nicer scumbag. Like, I mean, we could be here on my thoughts on Ronaldo for a few hours, so I won't dive into that. But for that to be his sort of last memory, or his last sort of like main appearance in Serie A, it couldn't happen to a better person for that to be his sort of like goodbye, his send off. Yeah, no, it was good too. Obviously, you know, I was getting quite a bit of messages coming through, and Juve fans can't ever believe that they may lose a game. So a lot was deleted a few minutes after that, after the goal was being called back. So that was kind of nice on a personal level. You know, the last time we beat, And I realized that we didn't win that game, but in my head, it's a moral victory.
It's a moral victory, yeah, for sure.
And the last time we beat Juventus was at home in Turin, at home for Juventus in Turin. And, you know, it was an opening day game and no one expected it. And that's still the happiest moments of my life. So, yeah, you know, we had... in air quotes again, an easy start to the season, because you never know, like these little teams, and Udinese part of them, but I'm also talking about like the Spezias and whatnot, they disrupt, they can have those, you know, those wins or like late draws that really do shift the table, especially at the end of the season. We're getting those sort of out of the way now, for lack of a better word, but I haven't written Udinese off yet. I mean, I don't think we're going to stay in our European spot, which I think we are now. I don't know how it's changed from this morning, but we were in fifth or sixth last time I checked. I don't think we're going to remain there for the rest of the season. But, you know, the team has been at least a little bit more coherent. I think that's the nicest way I can put it. We have a manager who has, you know, kind of lasted a little bit more. People kind of think Udinese and they think Guidolin, because that was sort of the last sort of long standing. If you look at their managerial history, it's been a bit of a revolving door. I have some issues surrounding Gotti's choices and whatnot, but I mean, it is what it is. At the end of the day, what I think makes Udinese a little bit different than other kind of like mid-tier bottom clubs, like you can't compare them to a Milan or a Juventus or whatnot when it comes to management. But I think our owner, he pulls a lot of strings, and I think he is more involved in the club than people realize from behind the scenes. So it's hard, you know, he's been there since 1986, and we're very thankful as a club of everything he's done, because he's pulled us out of, you know, Serie B's obscurity, and like we've kind of bounced around, but the last few years, you know, we've been in top tier and whatnot. His son has sort of taken over a little bit more. Obviously, they also own Watford, which is a both a blessing and a curse, because they're getting in that money from Watford, but they're making money from Watford, so that's where everything is going into. We're getting kind of that sort of like open stream of Watford players as well, so like that's kind of good. But I think at the end of the day, this club is sort of become a little bit stagnant because we've stayed in Serie A for so long, because we just sort of like do what we can and you know, finish up a relegation, sort of mid-table, nothing really to complain about. Udinese is a small club. What do you want? What do you expect? You know, be happy that you're here.
Exactly.
But the truth is, 10 years ago now, I'm looking at the date, we were fighting for a Champions League place.
Right.
We were, you know, we had the top goal scorer in Serie A, to go back to Di Natale, which I'm sure somebody you would like to talk about. You know, we were beating Inter 5-1 or 5-0, whatever that last game of the season was. We can do it. And you know, the chances of us doing it again are very unlikely. Like, I understand that. I know there's sometimes anomalies in football. I get that. But it's not a lost cause. And I think because we are that smaller club, because our fan base doesn't bring in, you know, the same dollar amounts as other clubs do, we are almost expected to be like, be thankful you're just here. And that's, I'm not cool with that. I want to see something. I'm sure we'll talk about signings in a few minutes, but like the last big, and please note, I'm putting quotation marks around it, the last big signing we had was Maxi Lopez. Like, only right. Because most people recognize his name because of the whole Icardi Wanda sort of triangle scandal. Yeah. And I can't think of the last big name that we signed before that didn't become a big name in retrospect. So, like, right. I don't know, Beckenbauer? Right. Like, it's frustrating being a fan. It's great when they do well, or they do produce, like, you know, your Alexis Sanchez or you know, whoever's coming out of that squad and immediately gets sold. But it's hard. It's frustrating watching them. It's like watching your friend play Football Manager and you're just screaming at their decisions that they're making.
Mm-hmm. Right. You touched on a lot of things I wanted to get to. So
sorry, feel free to interrupt me.
No, that's okay. You know, Udinese was a Champions League club. I want to say about 12 to 13 years ago, maybe, right?
Yeah, a little bit less. I think it was 2011 when we were vying for a Champions League spot. I know I saw them in Europa maybe 2012, 2013.
They were also in the Champions League. They were in the group with Barcelona 1 year with Guidolin before Spalletti became the manager. So there's that, you know.
Guidolin first time around.
Yes.
Yeah, he's had a few. Yeah.
You know, you touched on players coming in or Udinese is really a club that does produce a lot of great players. You know, you did mention Alexis Sanchez, but, you know, Zielinski and Alan came from Udinese. Alan moved on, but Zielinski is one of the top midfielders, you know, in Serie A right now. And then you also mentioned, you know, not making the big money moves, but, you know, you brought in a lot of money this season with the sale of Rodrigo De Paul and mm-hmm. With Juan Musso going over to Atalanta as well. A couple of losses on free transfers as well. Giuseppe Pizzella, Stefano Cacciucca. You know, but I feel like you've invested, Udinese has invested pretty well. I'm a big fan of Pusetto. I have him on fantasy. I've had him on fantasy for the past couple of seasons. I think he's a good player. When he got hurt last season, I was really upset. But you have De Lofeo. You brought in Padelli. You brought in Marco Silvestri between the pipes. And then the German, Lazar Samardzic. Samardzic.
Yeah, from Leipzig.
From Leipzig, who got the match winner in the last minute of the match against Spezia. So not too bad. I mean, I had them finishing 13th as well, because I just see that pattern with Luca Gotti. He had them this is his second full season as manager. But that's where I sort of have them finishing in 13th, which, I mean, is sort of commonplace for Udinese at this point. But how do you feel like the owner and his son is going to invest going forward? Do you see them making Udinese a priority? I know you mentioned that they have Watford too. I think they sold Granada, if I'm not mistaken.
A few years ago.
So that could be like to sell a club like that, you know, and reinvest it in your other clubs. You know, you have the history of producing these big players. Do you think at this some point Udinese becomes an Atalanta type where they keep some of these guys and try to make a run for Europe? But I feel like they should be inspired by their performances in the first three matches. And I'm worried about going into this one against Udinese at the Dacia Arena, because Udinese is that team that you could just never really underestimate, because if you do, they'll beat you up. So how do you feel that, you know, how do you feel for the future of the club?
I don't know. And I think this is one of the first times where I don't know. The Pozzo family, so Gianpaolo Pozzo is who owns Udinese, and then his son Gino owns Watford, but essentially it's all the family company.
Right.
And Gianpaolo Pozzo is, I think he's 80 now. May have to fact check that and dub me over if I've said the wrong. It was recent. It was like in the last couple of months, because Udinese put out a bunch of stuff on it. And so, like, I don't know how much he's in control of the day to day. Obviously, you know, he's hired people to run the club and whatnot. But now that Watford is also back in the Premiership and whatnot,
right,
it's a sexier club. I can understand why the family would want to sort of like laser focus on something that has the potential not only to do well, even though I do think the English league is trickier to navigate than Serie A. Mm-hmm. And also because that's what's going to make money, right? Like, Potts is a businessman through and through, like that's the reality, and you go where what makes money, and this could be sort of his passion project. I believe, probably should have fact checked this before, but I'm almost certain that he kind of married into the family. Udinese was sort of on his wife's side of things, so
okay.
But he's, you know, a Friulano businessman, very connected to the city, well loved, and so to me it's just sort of like, is this becoming an old man's team where it's just like, we get into the routine, we do what we can, you know, where nothing is in danger, but nothing is really, because nothing's in danger, nothing is really being played for. And he's sort of going that sort of status quo where, like, you know, you see it with our nonos, that they get up, they do their thing, they go to the store, they go to church, they meet their friend for a drink afterwards, they sit in the backyard, and then they do it all again tomorrow.
Right.
Totally fine. However, as a fan, that's very frustrating. Do I want him to sell the club? A lot of people ask me about that because I do kind of complain about him. I don't know. I don't know if it's better the devil that you know than somebody who comes in and tries to, you know, blow everything up and it becomes just a disaster in general, or too much too soon, or too fast too far, whatever. One thing that I will say about them is their marketing is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know how many people outside of their fan base follow them on social media, but they are one of the, like the big clubs, like the Juve, like the Milans, they don't have their own sort of like English language accounts, but they always tweet in both Italian and English. They really do well to like interact with their fans, even just the social savvy of it all. If you go on Facebook and they post a picture of training, they do social links to where you can buy their jersey in store. It's these like little smart things that show that there are investment places in the club, just not on the pitch. I mean, they just unveiled, not just now, maybe it's a little bit less than 10 years ago, maybe 5 to 10 years ago, they just redid their entire stadium. They're one of the few stadiums I've been to in Italy that actually have a store attached to it, like the actual official store, rather than it's somewhere in the middle of the city down an alleyway. And so they're making these right, smart moves, again, off the pitch, outside of the pitch, that are showing that they do want to be a leader, that they understand the world's game, that they do want to be the sort of global savvy, you know, club. but that's not reflected on the pitch. And I think that's where my frustration is. It's like they have the right directors in different parts of the club, but not in the development player, you know, locker room side of things. Their boardroom, beautiful. Like, that just seems completely stacked. Their locker room, lots of questions there. So I think maybe, and because, you know, like, I'm in the digital marketing world, and like, my job is running a digital marketing agency, maybe I'm reading too much into it, because I'm seeing them do so many right things that it does look like they want to stay in Serie A. It does look like they want to be a club to kind of, you know, compete with people. And maybe they're laying that groundwork. They're laying the marketing down first. They're making that presence. But once they have that established, they'll turn to the field side of things. But
And they've also they've also redone the stadium, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah,
One of the gorgeous. Yeah. I think it was like one of the first like redone stadiums or what have you. But my cousin actually visited. I want to say it was right before the pandemic season. Went all the way up to Udine by himself, and watched the match. And he said it was one of the nicest stadiums he's seen in Italy. So, yeah,
you sit there and you can see the Alps from the background, depending on which curva you're sitting on. Yes. And like, they have those multicolored seats, which look kind of weird.
Weird, but cool. Yeah, I love it. So, I should say, though,
and this might be of interest to you, the first time I saw Udinese play live in Udine, I'd seen them in like Europa League and like away. But the first time I saw them play was against Napoli, so there you go.
What was the result? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but I remember only thinking if Di Natale would play, because if you follow patterns, when Udinese would play in Napoli, Di Natale would never play.
No, that's true. That's
interesting and controversial, and you know, potentially, you know, a good conspiracy theory. But yeah, he would never play in Napoli.
And yet he never wanted to leave Udinese. We were all trying. We were all pushing to get him, and he never wanted to leave. But he never wanted to play against us. It's true.
Yeah. Sorry to go back to the stadium.
No, that's okay, because we're talking about you going to see Udinese play Napoli. The first interesting little, you know, side note, the first Napoli's first win back to Serie A, after being bankrupt and going through all the motions with ADL, was a 5-0 win against Udinese in Udinese. That's something I'll
remember. You're welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's nice that we could, you know, give you that pity win.
Yes. So what can we talk about next? I'd like to talk about your thoughts on the match coming up. It looks like tomorrow, we're recording on Sunday, so tomorrow afternoon on Monday, and then we have a midweek fixture as well. Like I said, you played Roma, we have Sampdoria, but Napoli are coming back against Leicester City in the Europa League 2-2. So we've played we're in the every few days stage now. How do you see Udinese approaching this one? Do you think they go for a draw? Do you think they go out for the win? Do you think, you know, what are your thoughts? Luca Gotti has these guys playing really well. I mean, De Lofeo has two goals. Pusetto's got a goal himself, you know, the last minute winner last week, like we mentioned. And your team is not a bad team. It's not a bad team. I actually really like this team, the way they line up. What do you think? You think this is the one you guys finally lose, or do you think you go all out?
Honestly, I think we're going to go for the draw. I know no one wants to hear that, and I think that's a very Serie A mindset. Whenever I say that to other people, they're like, no one ever goes for the draw. I'm like,
right,
but it's all a the safe time. Bet. What are you talking about? Yeah. I do think Roma's going to be the harder game, just because of exhaustion and whatnot. This whole Serie A like schedule has been a little bit, not off-putting, but it's getting some getting used to, the whole like split of games, for fans, and I'm sure probably for players as well. I think today, what I'm hoping for today is to kind of continue that momentum of maybe we could win. I think if we get completely destroyed, it's going to really affect our next couple of games right now. And again, you know, we were playing little clubs, in quotations, because I realize we're a little club too, so there's no snobbery there. But I think that this team is still kind of finding itself. It is not a, it's not a brand new team, but it is different from before. We lost sort of like our big talisman that we were used to last season. Changes in like goalkeeping and whatnot. I think people underestimate how much that affects teams too, to not have that sort of like backbone support always behind you. I think there is a psychological kind of repercussion on that. And Udinese is also a team that changed their goalkeeper a lot more than most other teams do as well. So I think there is a little bit that plays into it. I do think, though, this afternoon's game, the Juventus-Milan game, I think if Juventus gets destroyed again, or not destroyed again, but just destroyed, I do think that's going to kind of play psychologically in. I don't think anyone other than Udinese fans really put themselves up against Juventus. I mean, Milan is sort of like our geographically closest rival of a big team, but I do think that morale around Serie A in general is sort of swelling based on the self-destruction of Juventus. So I think if they can kind of get taken down another peg, there might be sort of this, like, I don't know, rivalry of the north, if you will, that may push Juventus, or may push Udinese, sorry, a little bit more for that win. But as of right now, how everything stands, I say they play for the draw against Napoli, and they just pray to God that they don't get destroyed by Jose Mourinho's Roma.
Yeah, yeah. How much do you miss Rodrigo De Paul? I hate to say this, but I feel like it was an expected transfer. Like, he was going to go somewhere. But a lot of fans of the league are upset that he's gone. How do you feel about him going to Atletico and not somewhere else in Italy? And I know you got to miss his presence. I mean, he's, you know, amazing player, amazing midfielder. Everyone wanted him. How do you feel about it?
To be honest, I'm surprised he didn't leave earlier. I'm surprised he stayed as long as he did. So that was sort of a blessing for us. I'm fine that he didn't stay in Italy. I kind of preferred. He's not Italian either, so he had no, like, you know, that right. hard tie to Italy. I kind of prefer when our players go outside Italy, because, like, even still seeing, like, Samir in goal for Inter, like, that is still
gut-wrenching
for me. It's just like, he was ours. But then when you have people like Bruno Fernandes and whatnot at United, mm-hmm. and you're like, he was ours, and you say it more with, like, pride.
Right.
So I'm okay with that. I don't know if you follow him on social media, but, like, him being called up to, like, the national team and whatnot, like, he just seems like such a happy player. Like, he's always over the summer with, like, the Copa and whatnot, he was posting, you know, pictures with him and, like, Messi and whatnot. And so, like, it was just, it's nice to kind of see him transition as a player. So while it kind of sucks for us, I don't think he was playing to his full advantage. Like, you can't say he's like another Di Natale or whatnot, because the team wasn't riding on him. They did rely on him quite a lot, but it wasn't like he was saving the team out of everything. So he didn't have that same sort of presence. But I do think him going to a team that, like, he can kind of play to his own strengths, he has the people around him supporting him, I'm happy for him. It's sad, but completely expected.
Right. So I just also checked your Coppa Italia fixture, your next one. It's against Crotone. So there's hope for advancement in Coppa Italia.
Honestly, I'm just excited we're still in Coppa Italia after August. Yes. That is something that has not been around for a while.
Yes. Before Napoli became Napoli that they are now, I always really wanted them to go far in Coppa Italia, because I was like, that's a trophy we can attain. It's something that we can get, you know, even as a lower league team. So you're still in Coppa Italia. Where would you be happy ending up in the standings this season? Like I know relegation, staving off relegation would be, you know, the main thing. But I don't think Udinese is a relegation team at all. I'm not trying to insinuate that.
No, but I'm saying if we did get relegated, changes may have had to be made. Like, maybe that's sort of the kick in the ass that we need.
I don't know. I somehow feel like Udinese is better. Like I said, I have them finishing 13th. But where would you be happiest that they finish when it comes to Coppa Italia and Serie A this season?
Coppa Italia, they've already exceeded my expectations, so I'm fine with that. I think getting a little bit further would be nice. Playing teams that, you know, they would regularly play in Serie A would be nice. No offense to everyone they've already played before, but for me, in the league, like, finishing in Serie A, up 10 or above, honestly. Like, it's not undoable. Undoable? I don't think that's the right word. it's not that unrealistic, but, right. Yeah, I think 10 or above would be where I expect them to be with this team, how they've started the season, and just the investment they've made with players. Is it going to be tricky? Yes. Are there a lot of good teams this season? I mean, we've talked a lot about, and just in general, we've talked a lot about the upsets that we've seen so far in the league. And that's mostly just focusing on Juventus. But I think it'll be a hard competition, but I will be disappointed if they finish lower than 10th. That said, right. I think you're probably right with 13, but I'm rooting for them, maybe.
Hopefully they get to the top 10. There's so many great teams this year, though. I mean, Fiorentina got better. It's funny, I say this to a lot of people, where they all talk about all the players that left, the Ronaldo, Lukaku, you know, Donnarumma, Hakimi, all these players that left. I really genuinely believe most every team in Serie A got better. Fiorentina got better. Roma with Mourinho and, you know, a few players that came in, they got better. Lazio, Sampdoria got better. This is going to be a very, very great season to watch. Hopefully you can sort out the issue with streaming over there and being able to watch more regularly. But is the match on TV tomorrow? Will you be able to watch the match?
I have to double check TLN. They're usually pretty good about that, especially because it's Monday. But
right. Yeah,
if not, there's always Sports Bay.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Sonia, I really appreciate you coming on with us today. Good luck with the rest of the way. Good luck with your baby. Good luck with luck with everything. Is there anything else you want to say before you leave?
I mean, sorry when we wipe the floor with you this afternoon.
Ooh, ouch.
That's going to come back to haunt me.
All right. We'll see. Yeah, no. I'm going to have to tell Marco you said that. And Kirsten. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I really want to thank you for coming in. I'd love to have you back. You know, unless some other crazy Udinese fan in English comes in, I don't think I'll have another Udinese correspondent. plus, we need to get together with Kirsten next time
for
the next go.
Yeah.
You, myself, Kirsten, maybe we'll have Marco in too. So how about that?
Can't believe we'll do a full show. Wouldn't wake up for me.
Oh, gosh. 6 o'clock Western time? Come on. That's not that bad.
So
all right, Sonia, thank you again. Good
thank
luck this
so
weekend.
Much. Thank you. I lie when I say you too. Ciao.
Ciao.